Hello and welcome to The Face Downs, your source for TCG news and all things Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm Lucas.
I'm Ruben.
And I'm Joe.
And we're back. Backpack.
We're back.
I think it's been about 3.5 weeks. We've been in Slack. 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
There's some Slack. Others have been executing self-care. Actually a lot of work to do a podcast and a full-time job. And yeah, we've been really feeling it the last few weeks, kind of, again, not out of Yu-Gi-Oh! For any particular reason. Mm. I'm trying to, because I have a desk job now, calibrate my life around trying not to have like a full-time desk job, podcast, and sedentary hobby.
That's a lot of sitting.
It's a lot of sitting.
Yeah. For me as well, I've been in a new job and I'm in a baby waiting room as well right now.
Yes.
But I've still been going to hobby, still running the hobby league down in Palmy. So, and it's going well. Mm. We've been getting some good numbers, like sort of around the 15, 16 mark for most weeks. And currently we've got Huggy, who's come back topping our leaderboard as well. So
really?
Yeah, playing Eldritch, but you know, we won't hold that against him.
It's not living
It's
forever.
A great deck to top a leaderboard at hobby with, I'll tell you
it
that.
Is. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
But so we're back. We're here to talk about all things North Island Championship because that has just concluded. We are recording the Sunday after the event. Mm. Lucas competed. I was head judge, and Joe was spectating.
Yeah. From afar. Yeah.
From
Unfortunately
afar.
For me, I couldn't come up with the baby's due date being like 5 days post the event.
There's no way.
There was just no way. Yeah. But
imagine you were like round six, and then your wife's just like,
"Yeah,
hey,
hey, can you come home now?
You might want to get on the next plane."
That would be a little awkward.
Looking from afar, though, it looked like a crazy event. Looked huge for a New Zealand event.
It was crazy. So we had 111 attendees, and 6 for the Dragon Duelists, which was awesome. So you know, just shy of 120 total duelists for the day. I think speaking with people like Connor Bryson and Dino, and obviously Joe, you can attest to this. This is kind of the size of old nationals.
Yeah. So old nationals would get around probably 100 to 200 players. So it is definitely in that zone. I believe, you know, if the South Island, if it wasn't split anymore, I think that this event would have probably hit the 150-ish at a push. But 111 just from the North Island was insane. Like, that's really good. And there was also like quite a few people that couldn't make it. So like it could have been bigger. But even then, I'm pretty happy to see those numbers.
Could have been 112 with you, Joe.
It could have been.
I think I said, you know, 111 main attendees. I said, ooh, 18 more people and it's 8 rounds.
Oh, God. Thank Christ that didn't happen.
I think I even after the event, and I said, yeah, if we had 18 more people, it would have been 8 rounds. Yeah. And Matt said, we don't have that space.
Nope.
And Matt said, I would unfortunately have to not allow that.
That's a throwback to when one time we all came up to a nationals, and Ken, the night before, got a little bit drunk and decided not to play the following day. And it was the cut from top 16 to top 8, and it was one player short of being a top 16. So it became like the hardest way of like getting the top in a tournament.
That's like,
I think it was
one maybe.
Yes,
like, if you had to maybe top.
Yeah. So yeah.
Oh,
the numbers
God.
Can be cruel, and I know that for 111 players, like a top 8 is insanely hard as well.
This was tough. Yeah.
This was pretty tough.
So we worked out the math at the start. XO was guaranteed. XO1 was guaranteed. X1 was guaranteed, but everything beneath that was maybe. So X11, X2. You're praying. X2, I think we ruled out as well at the start. Like, it would have to be a no draws top. And even then,
your tiebreakers had to be incredible.
There would
you
be like 30 X2s
to first and second.
Yeah. So it was a little stressful.
Yeah. But obviously, for these events, we did X2 would top 16, which is something that did receive prizes.
Yes. So X2 got, well, not guaranteed, but if you came X2, you were likely to get the cool ass Utopic Draco Future playmat. And some sleeves, which was nice.
And I think that's nice. I think it's really great for these events to at least provide something at that level. And it means that, of course, you want to do the top 8 and, you know, play for the big monies.
Yeah.
But you are at least walking away with, if you have a strong record and great tiebreakers, you will have a very high likelihood of walking away with something beyond that.
And I did. I came 13th. 13th yeah. place out of 111.
I have to say as well that mat looks so nice. Like the color scheme on it as well. It's like
the mat's
cool. I'm gonna use. Still like hitting it out of the park with mats lately.
I wanted a new mat and this one is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean top 13 or you know top,
top 13 baby. 13.
Yeah, top 15. Ooh.
Incredible. Like this is the largest event we've ever attended.
Mm.
It's obviously the largest event I've ever staffed, but this is the largest event that Lucas has ever competed in.
Yeah.
So what was your perspective on that one?
Honestly, I've been taking a bit of a break from Yu-Gi-Oh! And one of the things I've really been capitalizing on is trying to enjoy the game more than I am grinding the game. Because I think the last regional I played in Hamilton, I was just really like, I was so hard on myself when I lost. And it put undue pressure on maybe the decks I was playing were a little bit punishing for misplays, but also, you know, when you lose, it shouldn't be like a devastating world-shattering event. It's like, hey, I lost, right? And I don't know. I felt like my attitude was off. So I've just been approaching it like, just chill out, you know, still be vigilant and play well, but like, just have like the attitude of like, you know, it is what it is. I'm not here to like, you know, live or die by winning every single match and getting to that top eight. So
yeah,
in a way, I wasn't going into this like the most well-prepared or vigilant that I've ever been, but still wanted like a deck that I thought could carry me there and was probably the easiest deck to play as well. So
I mean, I also, it's a testament to your skill. Like it's something like I would have probably expressed a bit more concern had I not been confident of your skill as a player. So, you know, yeah, it's a matter of you are confident in what you present and your ability to play. And that's a huge thing. Mindset is something we've talked about before. You really have to go into these things with, if at minimum, an open mindset. You've got to approach these events and going, it's okay. What the cards literally will fall where they may.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's just the gig. That is just how it is in these events. And I think you do have the right approach for this one.
Yeah, for me as well. I've always done a lot better in the events where not going in with like a I don't care attitude, but going in with the attitude where like I'm gonna have fun. If I don't do well. Okay. If I if I do well, then that's a bonus. And every time I've done that, I've done really well. Every time I've like overly stressed and prepared about an event, and I know it's different for everyone, but like for me, when I tested heaps and I overfought everything, and you actually go into the event like quite stressed out, I've always found. And when you lose your first game, you get even more stressed and you're sitting there going, oh no, if I lose again, like my top cut chances are gone and all that sort of thing. So
that's something funny is that one of the reasons I was stressing out about the last couple of regionals I played is because I thought I wanted to get an invite.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, well, I have to do well because I want the invite, right? Mm-hmm. It turns out that the event that I took like a meme Drytron build to and just bricked to ever living hell in like a store champs that I went X3 in 4 rounds. I got an invite from that. Like the event I went into was just like I don't care. I'm just going to play some dumb crap and do badly. And then I did badly. Was the event that got me an invite because there were like no players. Mm. So I didn't even have to stress at those other regions. I could have just played memes. Oh, so live and learn, right? Live and learn.
Well, I mean, that's unfortunately a result of it, like reporting being very, very, very important in mentality as well. When there is an additional factor of, oh, this is potentially my only way to qualify.
Mm.
You will find yourself putting, I would say, an unnecessary amount of pressure simply because the looming fact of I must get something is always there. But you know, it turns out memes turn into dreams.
Memes turn into invites always. Yep.
So yeah, 111 players. So with 7 rounds, cut to top 8. As we discussed earlier, essentially you had to go no lower than X11 to top 8, and in fact in the top 8, 9th place was X11.
It was one X11. Unfortunately, Martin was not only part of our car over there, the only X11 to not top 8.
Yeah,
because it was literally like, oh, you're gonna top, and then the last 2 rounds, top tables tied. like both the like round 6 and 7.
Round 6 had
there were top like table one, draws, yeah, and it was just like. Draw. Sorry, sorry, dude.
Yeah.
It looked really clean until then.
From an organizing perspective, it's very interesting when you get to these last couple of rounds and you just kind of scout out and you go, okay, here's who makes it.
I'd like to also give a shout out to Capano, once again, fan of the pod, for lovely going X02 in round 2, so 2 draws, and then came 3rd with an actual fourth with an XO2 record.
I'm gonna hand it to him as well. Like playing that Mech Knight deck again. Like he has mastered that deck. That is crazy.
Drawing Change of Heart. We all said when Change of Heart went to one, this is a buff to Capano.
This is a Capano.
Capano went from tier two to tier one when Change of Heart went to one because that man's
Change of Heart
ability to draw Mind Control was unparalleled. And Change of Heart is just a second Mind Control, and he was drawing Mind Control plus Change of Heart. Like his life depended on it. It was so funny. Everyone who played against him was just like, what am I supposed to do? Like, he goes second, he draws that, I lose. It's over.
Yeah.
So funny.
And so, yeah, so really great event. Our most represented deck was Despia Branded. That was the highest representation, followed closely by Eldritch and its variants. And then third was Sword Soul. But I believe when I were doing the meta analysis, there were 37 unique decks at this event. And there was not counting variants. So an example, it was like Eldritch was the deck with three sub-variants being played. So 37 unique decks. That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty standard. 11 players, having 37 other is pretty normal.
I believe the UK national graphic, like the graphic has come up for that deck breakdown, there's 140 other decks. And then the most represented deck is Sword Soul at 130.
Yeah.
So, and they're at 800 people.
I think that's kind of a bit of a testament to how open the meta is right now. Like, you can play kind of a good handful of decks and do well at a tournament at the moment.
How open the meta is to Scythe Pass. Yeah.
So I would disagree. I would disagree with that because my experience, and I think most people's experience I was around the top tables the whole day. I was never below table 15. And my matchups were Despia, followed by Eldritch, followed by Synchro Pile, followed by Despia, followed by Live Twins, then Despia, then Sword Soul. So while there were other decks, there's different decks, but I do believe the triangle of this meta has formed.
Yeah.
And it is Synchro Pile, it is Sword Soul, and it is Branded. And Eldritch, I just wouldn't consider part of the triangle because a lot of them are playing Adventure or Branded or both.
Or Punk.
Or Punk. So they kind of just sit as the, hey, you can play these trap cards in your Punk deck, right?
Hey, these are the best discards. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Then Eldritch itself, I do not believe is a deck. I just don't believe it's a deck. I think Floodgates are way too answerable. So, yeah, I think the triangle has formed, and I very much felt the triangle while I was there. Mm. And most people I talked to either played all Sword Soul, all Despia, or all Pile. Like, it was just everyone had this experience where it was like back-to-back-to-back-to-back meta triangle decks. So it's interesting. One thing that I think has benefited the format is that it is a triangle, not a straight line, because I felt like there was a lot of formats recently where it was like either you're playing Branded or you're playing Pile, or hey, you're playing Sword Soul or you're playing Pile, or like there was like this, and Prankids kind of became a Pile deck, so it was this really muddy format where you couldn't really pick an identity. And now it feels like, hey, do you like fusion summoning? Do you like synchro summoning? Or do you like
Link summoning,
basically? Or like, do you like this kind of generic engine deck? And it's fun. Like, you do get to feel like your deck is really different from your opponent's, which I would probably 100% attribute to the banning of Verte Anaconda. Like, almost single-handedly, that card was holding the format hostage.
DPE. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
I think, like, you know, if we say, for example, like we're commentating this event, you would have seen quite a difference in playstyle compared to when we commentated the one in Dunedin. Just because, like, I think we counted like how many DPEs came out, and it's ridiculous. Like, it was just DPE, Scythe Locks, and Adventure. And at least now, like, people are playing their decks. Yes, they're still using like very generic things like Halka Fibrax and now Formula Synchron. Thank you for coming back. I guess it still has its issues, and there's still cards that like are a bit too generic, but at least now there's no real fallback plan as such, like an Anaconda.
No, because the fallback plan is at one, right? Hulk is your pop scythe button, but it's at one, so if you get nibbed and you can't protect it, that's it. You can't pop scythe anymore. You got to find something else to do, and
you can at the instep because that's when Dagda resolves.
But it's not as good.
Yeah.
So I could talk about my list, I guess.
Yeah, go for it.
Go ahead.
So you came 13th.
Top 13.
Top 13.
Synchro Pile deck. And honestly, there's not like a ton of spice, so there's no need to go over like what I specifically thought was unique about this deck. I looked at the lists and we talked about them. I think Dino and such, you know, we all kind of had a look at the list. And yeah, there was like nothing to change, right? Like pretty much all the ratios have really, really good math behind them. Like the reason you play two illusion is so you can tuck back Basil Rose Shoots so that you can search them later. Or you can search another one off Herald. Like everything has a reason. And I didn't feel like I needed to change any of that. I felt from testing that tuners were the thing you care about the most. And for that reason, I chucked in a Distrudo because Distrudo is a good card. It's a great discard. It's a tuner. There is a funny application with Psychic End Punisher where it can set up an OTK with one card because you get exactly 4,800 attack points gained in the battle phase if you use Distrudo, Psychic End Punisher, and Z Ammon's effect. But yeah, ultimately this deck was super consistent, didn't break one time. I realistically lost to the Mirror, despite losing the Die Roll one game one, but then got Veil and Nibbed in game three, which was just pretty much the pivotal hand trap combination against this deck. There's not a lot of recovery. Like we said, that used to mean
nibbing something.
Yeah, like that used to be like, yeah, I'll just Virtue you and pass, right? Nowadays you don't have that. That's what the nerf of this deck was intended for, and it did work. And my other loss was following a grueling 40-minute down to the wire in time game against Live Twins. So I beat that Live Twins player like literally with 30 seconds on the clock. Sit down, chug a Coke.
Immediately
have to play against Michael Brandon. Chen, who top-8ed with Despia.
Top forward.
And I just sit down, I go first, I think, and I set up like the generic Scythlock with a Baron. And I'm like, all right, I can just like chill, right? I'm just like kind of brain dead. He activates a branded opening, I let it resolve, and then I just lose because he gets to do a ton of stuff in the draw step before I can Scythlock him. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm so tired. I go to game two, I set up, I think, Herald. No, it was Baron again. It was just like Baron, Dagda, Scythe, but Ash in hand. And he does the same thing. He goes like branded opening and draw step, and I'm like, oh, this time I'll Baron it. So I Baron. And then he goes main phase normal Alba's effect. And I'm just like, I should have Ashed. Because now he gets to fuse off. You know, I can't chain the Hulk and make Wonder Magician because he fuses it off before the activation window meets its timing. I can't Scythe lock him. And yeah, so I kind of like lost that match real quick. And I think that ended up costing me the game. Just being tired. And out of it. Because I then went on to win my next round and like realistically probably could have top 8ed with this list. It was really, I mean, like the deck is unreal.
It's fun. And
I think the thing I like the most about it is it has a really solid linear game plan, right? You get Wright plus Itali. You make Hot Red Herald, Baron, Scythlock with a Snow Engrave that can then quick synchro into a Chen Ying. So your ceiling is like obviously win the game, right? But what I found was this deck is actually so, so resilient because I would pretty much never get to do that, right? Like either the right into Fateful, that would get Ashed, or you'd start with the Punk line and that would get Veiled and you'd have to do something else. And what I found was I was almost always only getting access to 1/3 of the engines being Souls, Punk, and Adventure. And what came of it was like you'd end up with this random assortment of guys on the field. Like maybe you have a Zaman, but it never resolved, so you just have like an extra tuner, or maybe you've got a Foxy in your hand you can tribute the Zaman for and use as an extender. And depending on the deck I was playing against, there was a lot of interesting stuff you could do. Like against Despier, I was not Dagda Scything people. I was Baron Reborning it to play around Super Poly, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But then against other decks, you could, with like a Snow Engrave, tag out Hulk into Shooting Riser, send Jet Synchron, and then Snow into a Baron. So like a lot of the time, even when you only got like a little bit of the combo, your opponent looking at your board going like, oh yeah, I can break this. You would just pop out some random interaction that they'd be like, oh, I didn't realize you could do that. Selene access code probably was the MVP of the event. Just the number of times that you just get that far and your opponent goes, you got access code? Yeah, next game. Way too easy. Way, way, way too easy. I think Hulk's going next list. It's just...
I'm telling people, I say, please enjoy using Hulk, Scythe, and Mystic Mind because they are not living
it's too
list.
Criminal that it's... your combo enabler going first, and it's your best OTK tool going second.
Yeah.
With no downsides, it's incredibly easy to make. It's always a net neutral.
I can't believe that they brought back Jet Synchron.
Yeah.
With Hulk still around. Like, when I play this deck, like, it just seems so unfair that those two cards are, you know, exist.
The number of times that I was able able to go Hauk, Jet Synchron, Anima, Selene, Access Code, Reborn Jet Synchron, Reborn Chaos Ruler, Hot Red game. Like, yeah. It's just like, this shouldn't be allowed, and yet it was just so, so, so easy to get off.
One thing I have to say about this deck, because I'm playing quite a different variant. It's more of a fun variant as such. What I have to say is it's an incredibly fun deck to play. I don't know about how you found it, but...
No, it's fun.
Just combo in with Synchros is cool. I think
part of the reason my head was so hurt was that this deck is like the least free deck ever.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing happens unless you navigate the lines. And like I said, it's an EDO Pro deck. You can watch the replay and learn the combo, but...
That has nothing when it comes to in-person application.
No.
Like, it doesn't hold a candle.
You know, against Live Twins in particular, why that deck was so, so hard to beat was I got hand-trapped 3 times every game, right? It wasn't just like, he had Veiler. Like, he had Veiler, Ash, Droll, like, every game. Mm. And it led to this situation where, like, I didn't have much. He didn't have much. But, you know, we were grinding. Live Twins is a one-card engine deck. And it was our game 2 that went 25 minutes because... You know, I managed to, like, get a Snow in rotation, get a Chen Ying, but then I had to out a set card, so I had to turn that Chen Ying into a Psychic End Punisher, you know, banish my Snow, hope the Psychic End Punisher lived, got to my turn, hit him for 4,900, he was on 100 life points, top decks of the Live Twin, he pops my entire board. I top deck a Souls with an active anti-spell, so I have to, like, summon the Souls, send the anti-spell, it draws me an E-Telly, and it's just, like, this really clutch match where, like, a lot of my cards... when I draw them are just these insane swingers, right? Like, I just drew a right off the top. Now I get to kill you. But also a lot of the cards in the deck are just these dead garnets that don't do anything. Damn, I drew Basil Rose off the top with no Rose Dragons in grave. Oh, crap, you know. It's just about navigating those really tricky game states. And while that was fun, I think that inevitably was what made this way harder to pilot to top cut. Because... I don't think I misplayed that much, except against Despia, like I said. But just the caliber of play you have to be at to make sure this deck does not lose. I think the number of times I lost or won a game that I should have lost because I had one extra thing.
Mm.
My opponent like broke the whole board, and then I'm like, okay, but like shooting riser, send snow, make a thing on the clutchest play, or like, I just managed to eke out an extra draw and then like get something. It was just never free. I went to game 3 every match. Whereas I think Despia has a bit more of like a sit back and relax. Did they hand trap my Brand Infusion? Nah, we're chilling. Like, it's so easy to do the Despia stuff. There's only like 4 or 5 points of decision making in that deck. And most of the time it's get ad lib, set Brand in a red pass. Like, you don't really have to think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think all in all, we did come to a pretty good conclusion with this deck. Like, again, your mentality was just have some fun, play a good deck. And I think that definitely was evident. I think the only really talking point here is in your extra deck was the exclusion of the zombie vampire. And that's pretty justified. We ran through it. Everyone wants their cards in grave this format. Literally everyone.
Yeah, I can't think of a card that reads lose the game more than that card. Like, it's if you activate that card, the card's text should say, and then after this effect resolves, you lose the game.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of, like, mill the Eldritch Traps, mill an Enchantress, mill the Tenyi, mill the Snow, mill the Jet, mill the Therian.
I've been using it in Palmy just purely because, like, people's decks in Palmy are weird. And, like, it doesn't have that problem so much here. If I took it to a big event, for sure, I'll be cutting it. Yeah.
I took out the Dark Charmer for Underworld Goddess, specifically for Adagnista and other towers. And so lo and behold, there was like a guy that was like 4-0, James, on Adagnista. Like round 4, he was 4-0. He was definitely headed for top cut. And I'm like, all right, sick. I have the out, right? And I never versed him. And then there was like one game. It was the one against Chen that I lost due to misplay. So it doesn't really matter. Had I played optimally, it wouldn't have come up. But like the Dark Charmer would have won me that game. So I guess that's the only consideration. But to be honest, I don't think that's relevant because it only came up in the game that I lost due to just bad play, just playing like ass.
Yeah.
So I own that, right? It's fine.
That's totally fine.
And I came top 16, so, you know, fuck them.
Yeah, pretty great.
Still pretty good.
And so our top 8 breakdown was pretty interesting. So we had 4 Despia branded in top 8.
Yep.
And then that whole bracket faced each other. So they were essentially playing mirrors to the finals. And the other half was Adventure Dragons, branded Eldritch Adventure, you had McKnights, and then you had, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry, who the other person was.
You're always going to forget one. Jawei on Sword Soul.
Sword Soul.
Who was the only undefeated Swiss player. Yeah.
So crazy. Certainly, we talked about it. If you're playing Sword Soul, you have to draw gas all day. You literally, your hands have to be fuego to get to that point.
And like I said, it is, I think, the most punishing deck of the format. People thought that deck was easy. It is not.
Girl, no.
Because every other deck, like Despia or Punk Synchro, you just got a bunch of guys in the grave that do stuff. So like, if you mess up, you're like, oh, I'll just like Jet Synchron summon Access Code. Yeah, cool. Whereas in Sword Soul, it's like, ah, oh, crap, I missed an Nidhara. What do I have? Oh, nothing. Pass on Boxia. It's like, oh, it's like so bad when you mess up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, good job. We had Sword Soul versus Eldritch, and then we had Adventure Dragons versus Mech Knights, and then we had two branded mirrors. That then reduced to Adventure Dragons versus branded Adventure Eldritch, and then another branded mirror. And then the finals was Adventure Dragons versus branded Despia. Marshall has never bricked so hard in his life. And the event was taken by David Crystal on Despia branded.
It was like no plays, right?
Literally game two after siding, pass turn from Marshall. God.
That's finals, baby. Everyone knows that's how finals goes in card games. That's why everyone split.
Always anticlimactic as well.
Like this event you couldn't split because it was like a prize card, but like that's why everyone splits, because you know you're going to sit down at finals and just play the worst game of Yu-Gi-Oh of your life.
I mean, also, you got to the point and it's like you're at the finals of these events, you both walk away with a Nintendo Switch.
The only difference was the prize card,
literally. So like, the prize card and what the plaque said.
You look at your opponent, you go, you're gonna sell it? They're like, nah. You're like, all right, sweet, we'll just play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And David didn't. Someone offered him like, do you want to sell it? He's like, nah, I want to keep
it. It's his first. David said himself, this is his first premier top. And it's the first prize card he's ever won.
That's awesome.
And David's been playing for a very long time.
David's definitely an OG, or at least when we came in, he was one of the people.
Team Gay.
We were talking about before the podcast, people that kind of brought you up when you started playing, and David's crew, like...
Yeah, David, Kyle, Corey.
They were like...
so nice, so inviting.
When we started, they were the killers, right?
Girl, yes.
Kyle was on his like Striker Orcus. David was playing, I think, Oh no, was he playing Thunder Dragons?
No, he was on the go second, and then he pivoted to Madolche.
That's right, he was on Madolche's. But you know, he was good, right? Like I'd play against him, I'm like, damn, it's David. Like I'm gonna lose.
Same against Corey. You're good.
Corey's good as hell too.
And so you look at these players and you go, this is great. Marshall obviously coming second place, so great, such an amazing pilot. And great attitude. I think that was like the biggest thing that stood out, was he was just like, he was chipper the whole day, never stressed out once. I mean, he was thankful he was on that side of the top eight bracket, because he was like, my games are done in 20. I'm going to go sit down.
Yeah, so the branded mirrors were all
out. The branded mirrors were all nearly to time. And I will say, takeaways from the event as observing, Crossout was incredible. That card for specifically the branded decks quite literally was game determinative.
I mean, I think you got a bit of a tilted observation of that, because it was all mirrors, right? Like the card is insane in a mirror match.
Right? Like, but it's like, I was walking around and it was like, I saw crossouts and I was like, yep,
it's
these
for
make
Ash,
sense.
Obviously.
And I was like,
let's see
Ash. Yeah. And, you know, the mirror, obviously, that literally was game determinative.
Like against me, Chen crossouted like a snow and I was like, that's fine. Like, you know, against my deck, it didn't seem like it was as impactful because I'm just playing so much random garbage.
Mm.
But I definitely see the value of it. And like, because there was so much Despia, like all the crossout Despia decks topped. Because
I mean, three out of the four.
They were just all crossouting each other, you know, Despia cards. And it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Would have loved crossout against Connor, because he stole my Xiamen with Alcer and then killed me with it. So mad.
I think that realistically, crossout was insane. I do think main deck Nibiru was quite the correct choice going forward into these events.
Oh, yeah.
And... definitely side decks, Droplets and Darkruler. Like, Droplets is basically main deckable at this point. I think Droplets is so powerful, especially if you're an extra deck strategy and don't want to lose to goddamn Scythe Lock.
It's funny you say that, because actually I sided out Nib, I think, every game except against
Sword Soul.
Connor and Heza.
Yeah. Well, of course, because those...
Because I just played
the other decks.
Branded
and only
other,
yeah.
Oh, no, Live Twins too. I kept it in for Live Twins.
Yeah.
But
it functionally does nothing against the branded list. Which
is
interesting because a lot of branded players are now going greed.
Doesn't matter. Like, they barely, like, the Mirror Jade on their field at the end of their turn is usually dead anyway, right? Yeah. So, like, you give them a Nib token, they can still make Guardian with it. So, like, it doesn't actually do anything to Nib them at the end of their turn or anything.
No. And you lose, sure.
Yeah.
Because it gets blown up. Yeah, I think all in all, the event was really well. Rulings-wise, nothing too crazy. Mm-hmm. Again, thanks to everyone who came up to me and asked how I would roll. That's definitely how you do it going forward. You know, you consult your head judge before the event starts and go, how are these rulings being ruled for this event?
Yeah, there were no player mishaps. There were no incidents.
No incidents occurred, which was lovely. Everyone remained seated. And I think that also, you know, we see a lot of people understand that this is the precursor to large events. Mm-hmm. At this event, the announcement of OC was made. So OC is occurring and is in New Zealand. Ooh. So to those who, you know, maybe weren't at the event or maybe missed that announcement, that has been confirmed. The times are to be announced and location is to be announced, but it's happening. And I think that's going to be incredible. Obviously, I'll be interested to see how they approach these kind of events without worlds, because really that's the big enticer. And obviously, Joe, you've played overseas. That's kind of the gig.
It is, but I don't know. I feel like we've seen how generous they've been with like North Island, South Island champs prizes. So I would assume that the prize for it will be worth showing up for anyway.
Yeah, probably cost less than flights and accommodation.
Yeah.
For them. But I think all in all, this event was really well. The turnout really was what blew me away. I would have never thought I would have cracked. I wasn't thinking 80. I was like 80, maybe. Over 100 attendees. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I feel like when people, like even in Palmy, because we only had one Palmy player show up, you know, we see these events now, and people will be like, oh man, I want to get involved in the next one because it was that big, you know? So I just feel like it's a good precursor for even bigger events in the future.
People listening don't know, because of COVID, last year our North Island Champs was remote duel, and it had, what, 40 people?
Yeah.
36 people. Yeah. So the fact that we've turned it around, you know, this is a big monumental occasion, because since the lockdowns,
3x,
we haven't had an event crack like 50, right? Like there was one regional, the shuffle one, that went to like 70. South Island Champs was quite small. It was like 46.
I mean, the Hamilton regional was one person off 7 rounds.
Yeah.
So like 64 people.
We've had some events, but an event like this, it was almost like a humbling experience for people who maybe would have caused more trouble, or like people would have just been like more salty or whatever. Because they're looking around, they're like, this is massive. This is like a lot of people playing, you know, myself included. You know, I was lucky to go to the GC Champs, which was like relatively similar. But, you know, Connor wasn't playing back then. So for Connor, this is the first thing he's gone to. And it's like, this is a lot of people. You know, this is a bigger feeling than even a regional. And I think that had like an effect on a lot of people's mood. I think everyone was really positive going into this, because even when you lost, you just had to look around and you're like, there's a lot of people playing Yu-Gi-Oh here, and that feels cool.
Yeah. And I think it definitely is a precursor as well. And it's kind of a sign of the post-COVID times for Yu-Gi-Oh in New Zealand as well. So I'm super excited to see, you know, big events again, you know, from this point. So,
yeah. I guess you, Lucas, playing, what would you think was the most impactful card you ran?
Most impactful card was Access Code. Not close.
Yeah.
It's basically become a format where, you know, being able to push for game is just essential, because either your stuff's getting blown up in the end phase, or you're just aware that your opponent's going to just grinding you out. And I even played against the weather in a winner mat, and I didn't get lethal, and then they killed me. You know, it's like every deck has this kind of insane resource engine. Branded is the one that just every turn will present lethal, so you have to basically kill them first. I think besides that, definitely Rite of Aramisia was the high-impact draw of the day. Itali was fine. Itali was like, I could honestly do without it. But Rite of Aramisia was irreplaceable. Getting to that before you mill, getting to that before you become hand-trapped by other means is just bonkers. And the ceiling on that card, if you hard draw Griffin Rider or you hard draw like Red Rose Dragon, is to the moon. You know, it goes from a hand that would lose to like Droll or a Hand Trap to a hand that is literally unstoppable, besides with like Veil and Nib, which is exactly what Connor did to me, which is the correct play. So yeah, that's the two most impactful cards. Sorry that they're both expensive and have been meta staples and are completely generic.
Literally since they came out.
Not my fault, that's the deck.
Yeah. I guess that's probably the most interesting thing is that, you know, apart from Capano's Mech Knight, there was no quote-unquote rogue in the top eight.
No, and Capano's Mech Knight, like, call it rogue because it is, but the cards that quantify that deck were being played in every deck, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he was on Mystic Mind, but he was definitely on, like, Dark Ruler. He's on
Lightning
Storm.
Droplets,
Change of Heart, Lightning Storm. You know, to say those cards are rogue cards in themselves is completely incorrect.
No. The strategy is rogue.
Yeah.
The cards are not rogue.
And I think pretty much every rogue deck presented a kind of lethality. Like, Live Twins present lethal as a one-card engine. Mech Knights present lethal very easily alongside these broken staples. I don't think they're that different from Sword Soul in that sense, right?
No. The difference is accessibility, really. Because it's like, you know, Sword Soul was printed last year. And it's like, Droplets is still not accessible. Mech Knights have probably down a bit. But like, you look at these high competitive strategies. I mean, to me, what stood out the most was like Baron. I was like, this card is just so strong. Yeah. It is almost like you have to watch out for it.
Yeah, it's having a second wind because of the fact that we can't pop Scythe with Verte. Everyone has to pop Scythe with Hauk, and they're like, well, why not make a Baron too? And what that's done is made the Scythe setup way stronger, because the DPE Scythe setup was often just DPE Scythe. Now it's DPE Scythe Baron. Or not DPE, it's Scythe Baron.
Hauk, yeah.
For free from making Hauk Dagda. And, you know, in a sense, it's weaker to cards like Dark Ruler, it's weaker to cards like Droplet. You know? There are downsides, but the problem is that now when you resolve it, when your opponent, quote-unquote, doesn't have it, it's better than it was. Mm. And Scythe has only gotten stronger, in my opinion, this format. It has just gotten better.
Yeah, because the existence of non-extra deck strategies is basically nowhere.
Yeah, I won every game where Scythe resolved. It wasn't close.
Yeah.
Every single time.
I really do believe that. I think that card, unfortunately, should
if there was a card with a 100% win rate, no, I lost to the weather once when I Scythe locked them.
So 99%.
90% win rate card. That's probably a little high, I'd say.
It's definitely also, something they missed on the ban list, for sure.
Yeah, I think it should be banned tomorrow.
Yeah.
Personally.
I mean, I'd be quite happy to see it go, because then, like, I don't know, maybe it makes Hauk weaker again. But I don't know. I feel like Hauk and Scythe going may make the meta even more diverse.
Someone who often didn't resolve the Scythe, you can still do a lot with Hauk.
For sure. I feel Hauk and Scythe, I mean, the Bannis is probably a while away, but like those two cards are definitely
probably
top target.
Let's say probably 6 weeks away.
Yeah,
I'd say our Bannis is probably 6 weeks away, because so we get, for reference, at time of recording, we are expecting Power of the Elements in about 6 weeks. So end of July is the premier events for Power of the Elements. So I'd anticipate, similar to how Dimension Force, kind of the list came out the day of, or like the day after Dimension Force kind of officially released, that I'm thinking that's probably where we'll get that list. And obviously,
maybe Toad can go on there.
Like, you know, we've seen the most recent OTG ban list, they hit Hulk and Toad. Totally awesome. And I think that realistically, those are hits that I can see being applied. Maybe not Toad banned, but at minimum, I think Hulk is probably going.
Yeah.
I think it's probably time.
I think so too. Yeah. But no, that's definitely a discussion for another time. The ban list. We'll get to that for sure.
Painful choice.
The thing, we take time off in between podcasts so we can just keep milking the same stuff over and over.
Choice. Yeah. And I think, you know, relative to how, you know, if we take a look at how OCG are playing right now, obviously they've had their most recent ban list. And I think that it's really interesting seeing how strong strategies like T-Elements are in Japan. And Splite are still doing very well.
With Maxi. If they ban Toad here, Splite is dead. They can still search Maxi, so something to do.
Yeah.
We won't talk about that too much, though, because that's in the future.
Mama, every day is the future.
We're in the now.
We're living in the future. And I think that, you know, all in all, these events have given a lot of people hope. Okay, give a lot of people motivation and determination to achieve and, you know, upgrade their skill set in terms of competitive strategy. I think obviously the one, you know, someone who did not unfortunately do too well was Dino. You know, Agents was a cruel mistress that day.
He bricked, that's all.
Yeah.
He'll tell you that himself.
He'll tell you that. And that's, you know, and that's, I think, where that's probably another conversation we can have, kind of our last chat, is like the kind of the death of quote unquote rogue decks right now. Like, how do we feel in terms of like rogue strategies?
I don't know. It's rough at the moment. A lot of the rogue strategies still go down the same lines as what the meta decks do, but they do it in like a, I don't know, a worse way, I suppose. Like, they still Psyflock, they still try to do what the good decks are doing, but have like 15 more steps to do the same thing. So I guess that's what Rogue is, and what it is, this format is just a less consistent version of what we have, if that makes sense.
I talked to Dino about this with Virtual World, because I was playing Punk V-Dub, right?
Yeah.
And he was just like, why are you playing the V-Dub cards at two? I'm like, well, you have to fit the Punk stuff in. He's like, well, then you lose the advantage of the V-Dub cards, right? They're in-hand effects. You know, they're very hard to interact with. You know, you can chain, well, not chain block, but you can kind of, you know, it all resolves in hand, so they can't imperm them, stuff like that, right? You add all the Punk cards in, suddenly you have a bunch of imperm targets in the deck. So all you're really doing is making the V-Dub stuff worse because you want to play the Punk stuff, which is really good. But the Punk stuff works really well with generic Hulk Dagda combo, right? It's synergistic. Especially because the Foxy Toon can just discard Jet Synchrons, Snows, Scythes all day, whereas you don't really want to be discarding Virtual World cards except for King Long.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think you're right about rogue decks just doing what other decks do, but worse. I think with the one exception being Plant, I think is the only other deck I would put in contention as a legitimate rogue strat, and Agents. Plant, Agents, and I guess Marincess if you really want to one-trick that. In terms of, like, they're not actually doing what the other decks are doing.
Yeah, they are doing something different. Yeah.
Like, the Plant deck board and, like, what they're trying to do while they play Adventure or Therion is completely different. And not to mention that, like, Lilibori is a plant. So
it's a wind plant.
It's synergistic. I'd give that deck credit, but like I said, the meta's in a triangle, and the triangle is very forgiving. If you can't find a deck you like between Sword Soul, Despia, and Punk, ignoring budget, then I just think Yu-Gi-Oh! Isn't for you right now. I'm sorry to say. Like, that, those are the decks that actually just personify what Yu-Gi-Oh! Is in 2022, and that ain't changing, right?
I mean, like, I Despia, guess
Well, Despia is going to become Tier Elements. Sword Soul and Punk Synchro are going to find their life. You know, I guess Punk Synchro is probably the closest analog to Splite, just kind of like good stuff combo, all synergizes with each other. And then Sword Soul is going to stay Sword Soul. You know, maybe there'll be another OTK deck or another kind of value deck. But like, that's Yu-Gi-Oh right now. You're not going to go back to a time where like Wind Witch Invoked is a good deck or Pure Shadows is a good deck. It's just not happening until massive things change, or if anything, power creep hits those decks and you just get new cards for them. And that's how it is, you know?
For me, I've been playing Libramancer at the moment, but in a sense, it is very much doing the same thing as what the Synchro Pile does, but just in a slightly, I guess, worse way. But that's been a deck that surprised me a bit, because we read the support when it came out, and we were like, oh, kind of lackluster. It felt like B-Trooper again. And yeah, I've been really enjoying playing Rogue at the moment, but I guess I am in a different kind of meta in Palmy, so I can get away with that. But I also, while you're talking there, I had to shout out James English as well for winning the South Island Champs with pure Virtual World. Kind of what Dino was saying about Virtual World, being able to skip around. Yeah, and he went pure, like he just went Virtual World only, which was...
I think that's actually correct. If you are going to play V-Dub, just play maxed out on V-Dub. You sit down, you look at your deck, and you go, you know what? You're just not going to brick today. He didn't.
Two cards. You need two cards to play. And that's...
Two very specific cards. It's like, and also, like, there were V-Dub players at this event. They bricked. I talked to them. They were just like, I just bricked. I just drew, like, five traps. Couldn't play. Passed. Lost. And that's the reason I didn't play V-Dub. I'm not saying it's the reason not to play it. But I think when you play a deck like that with... you know, obviously really powerful cards. I don't know. You're just signing up for, like, disappointment when you don't draw them. And I think I wanted to do it to myself, you know, play a deck that's just like, you know, no matter what you draw, you're going to do something.
Yeah.
And I really felt that, like, this event, I never didn't play Yu-Gi-Oh! And I think that was probably my favorite part, that even when I lost, I was playing Yu-Gi-Oh!
Mm.
Even when I got Scythe-locked, there was stuff I could do. It wasn't just like this completely lost game until they ashed my card, and then I'm like, yeah, yeah, now you got it, you know?
Yeah.
Now you got it. Scythe and Ash? Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. And just quickly touching on Dragon Jewels, so it's 6 plays for that, which was awesome. And then Eric G took this out with Sword Soul. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. It was really nice seeing Dragon Duelists. Obviously, I think, Joe, you've seen a lot more like Dragon Jewel style events.
Mm.
For me, it's like these are the first two I've ever been a part of.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, they're cool.
It's cool. I did not expect it to fire. I really did not. I don't see any kids playing Yu-Gi-Oh! At Hobby, but there are quite a few parents with kids that sign them up, and then there's just like a few people who play at school, I imagine, that just like end up through the grapevine hearing about it. I mean, I don't know how they found out about it, but it's neat.
Yeah. I mean, you know, shout outs to the, you know, the advertising for this event. I feel like that really, you know, drove a lot of success for the like high attendance, is that once people know about it, they'll plan around it.
Yeah.
Was there a switch for grabs in that one as well?
Yeah, it was. And I love that the playmat's Dragon Duel 22, because it just makes it really special. Like, all the other top 16 ones just say, like, World States Championship 22. Qualifier States. This one says Dragon Duel 2022. Like, damn, that's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, the winning these events gets you invites to the Dragon Duel Oceanic Champions. Like, you are in charge
of... Is that going to be a 1v1 then? Oh, no, they all probably get invites, right?
Probably.
Yeah, because so that's 10 players, technically, if they all came up, which is a big ask for children, to be fair. Got to ask your parents to fly you up to Auckland.
Yeah.
Or wherever it is.
Yeah. I mean, it would probably be Auckland. There's like, realistically...
It's actually going to be in Bluff.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, we're all going to have to fly down.
We're actually going to...
Island.
We're going to Chatham Islands and winding the clocks forward 45 minutes.
Actually, the only
minutes.
Fair way to do it is it will be on the Inter-Islander.
Yeah, sailing to the other side.
That would be sick if it was a calm day.
Yeah. What in the battle city's going on? Yeah.
Yeah.
this OC will have the field spell effects from Battle City. So if you're on the water, all aqua monsters gain 200 attack.
Yeah. And if you're standing on glass panes, you will have bombs go off.
If you lose
life points. Pretty crazy. Konami's really wilding out with the new rules, but you know, 2022, you got to innovate the game somehow. Final note, just before we sign off in terms of like gameplay and stuff, they have now officially sanctioned the alternative formats.
Oh,
so
cool.
Things like Time Wizard, Heart of the Underdog, Deckmaster, Rivalry of the Warlords. So like...
Common Charity. The
good one. I think that's kind of cool. That's quite cool. Obviously, you know, we always look for the common reprints in sets, and, you know, OTS-19 isn't one of those. Unless you feel like really playing... Oh, didn't you say Heroics was doing quite well in Common Charity?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Symphonics reprints. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in terms of, like, gameplay that potentially will be a bit more open and inviting. You know, it means your Thursdays now can be run under a Heart of the Underdog kind of category. It's like, you are playing non-meta. And that's cool. I think it's important to give those opportunities to players. And I kind of hope that we see more of those, like, quote-unquote events at larger scale events. I even think, wasn't Coda talking about how there was, like, a Heart of the Underdog tournament at the YCS Hartford, and they just got handed decks?
Oh, that's cool.
Like, I think he literally got handed Unchained.
Like a rat.
Yeah.
Actually planted. Actual paid actor.
Paid actor.
Right, well, that was the final note, so let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
I think it's quite a long podcast.
But it's great to be back. Really nice to see all the events. And, you know, congratulations, Lucas. Top 16.
Top 13.
Top 13.
Top 13.
Don't take away my title.
Don't take away my title. You know, and we're happy to be back. And,
yeah,
you know,
so just a pre-warning for everyone out there. Obviously, I have a baby due very soon, so this may be... We'll be podcasting again soon, but it may not be a weekly thing for me in the next few, I guess, weeks and months. But we also may be doing slightly shorter podcasts to like accommodate it a bit. So we'll try our best. But yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, we're here. But you know, life finds a way.
It does.
And
yeah.
at time. We're making the most of what we can. But thanks, everyone. You know, thanks for tuning in. Thanks to everyone who came up to us and said, love the podcast. Thanks, Marshall, once again, for kicking our ass to do one. Forever and always, the doorstopper that we attempt to close. And thank you to everyone who has listened. If you are listening to us along on YouTube, please feel free to like, comment, and subscribe. Share it with a friend. It helps immensely. If you're listening on your preferred podcasting app, please rate and review us. It also does help. Share it with a friend. If you have any questions, queries, comments, or concerns, you can email those to thefacedowns@gmail.com. Probably need to dig through that one. You can follow us on Twitter. They'll be linked in the YouTube description. And as always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Ruben.
I'm Lucas.
And I'm Joe.
And you've been listening to
The Facedowns.
Oh, yeah.
You got it.
Good one.